Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. So this is the translation. O best of the brahmanas, please also describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants, take place. So this is Parikshit Maharaj. Bhagavatam is a book of question and answers, and Parikshit Maharaj is now inquiring further about the creation of the universe. And the last few verses have been about different aspects of that time and creation and things. So this verse he's asking further questions on these topics. So Prabhupada gives a short purport to this verse. Prabhupada says, "The inhabitants of different varieties of land, etc., are differently situated, and not all of them are equal in all respects. The inhabitants of the land are different from the inhabitants of the water or the sky. And similarly, the inhabitants of the different planets and stars in the sky are also different from one another. By the laws of the Lord, no place is vacant, but the creatures of one particular place are different from those of other places. Even in human society, the inhabitants of the jungles or the deserts are different from those of the cities and villages." "They are so made according to different qualities of the modes of nature. Such adjustment by the laws of nature is not blind. There is a great plan behind the arrangement. Maharaj Parikshit requests the great sage Shukadeva Goswami to explain all these support authoritatively in accordance with proper understanding." So before we begin the class, we'll just say some prayers. This is the Mangalacharan, it's invoking the presence and the blessings of our previous acharyas and all the teachers in our line. So if everyone can join in, or meditate on the prayers if you don't understand or don't know them. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Putale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivashakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinapandu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turunvyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivirshesha Shunyavadi Hastyatya Deshatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadaya Shiva Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we're going to try to break down a few of the points in this verse and look at a few of the themes that Prabhupada sets out in the purport. I'm going to try and use less kind of devotee dialect than normal. It's like when I was about 12 years old, we moved to North Yorkshire, and some of the locals there, they really have a strong dialect, so it's actually very difficult to understand, especially the farmers and things. It's very difficult to understand what they're speaking about. There's new words and everything. So sometimes it's the same in devotee circles. We have a certain dialect, a certain language that we use to communicate between us. And maybe that's not always understandable by everyone. So we'll maybe use less of that today in more general terms. And the inspiration I got for that is actually from this book by Prabhupada. I don't know if anyone's read this book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. It's very beautiful. Prabhupada is speaking to the scientists, basically is very much aimed at the scientists. And he translates a lot of the verses from the Bhagavad Gita, but in a very different way. So I'll just read you a couple just to give you a taste of how accessible Prabhupada is making the Bhagavad teachings of the Gita. So this is from, I don't know where in the Gita. But Prabhupada talks about antimatter. So this is one very famous verse. He says, the material body is destructible, and as such it is changeable and temporary. So in the material world, so is the material world. But the anti-material living force, normally the soul, is non-destructible, and therefore it is permanent. Expert scientists have thus distinguished the different qualities of the material and anti-material particles as temporary and permanent, respectively. So that's... I wish I had the original verse to tell you, but I didn't research that enough. But basically, it's very, very different language Prabhupada is using to reach a certain audience. So Prabhupada was expert at kind of reaching people where they're at. So in this verse, it's talking about creation. It's talking about the inhabitants of different worlds and different atmospheres are according to the consciousness of the people. So we're going to look a bit into these topics. And Prabhupada had an interesting relationship with scientists, actually, in general. This book was aimed at the scientists, but generally he was quite strong on scientists. If you hear any conversations he has with scientists, he can be quite heavy, because his point was that they're not actually being scientific. So the scientists, you know, as a scientist, you should take a theory, you should make an experiment, and then you should see the result. So Prabhupada is saying, look, I'm presenting you a theory, it's maybe different from what you're currently practicing, but at least being scientific and try it out. But they would reject it because it's not measurable according to their kind of instruments, you could say. So Prabhupada was very strong that you're not being scientific, you're a scientist, but you're not being scientific. So some of the conversations you hear with Prabhupada and scientists are very, very interesting. And modern science tells us so many things, you know, so many things that we're taught in school. For example, evolution and natural selection as a means for us to adapt. So in this purport, Prabhupada's talking about how different entities are adapted to their environments. So we're taught that it's through evolution and it's through natural selection that we become adapted to a certain environment. Prabhupada is challenging that here. He's saying that nature's not blind. It's not just a random kind of mutation that we can manage to live in a certain place. But he's saying that it's intelligent. And this is an age-old argument between scientists and theists. Is it intelligent design, or is it just chemicals, or is it just through evolution? But interestingly, a lot more of the science is pointing in the direction of intelligent design, a lot of modern research and things. So actually, Darwin himself said, there's an interesting quote I found from Darwin, he said, "To suppose the eye, with its incredible ability to adjust focus for different distances, admitting different amounts of light, and correction of spherical aberrations, which means abnormalities, could be formed by natural selection, seems, I freely confess, absurd to the highest degree." So this is Darwin himself, the propounder of the natural selection and evolution theory, saying that it sounds absurd that such a complex instrument as the eye could be just a random mutation. And also ourselves, we also assume intelligent design all the time. For example, you see a beautiful painting, or you see a statue, you see a house, and you say, who's designed this? You know, the first question is, beautiful painting. Okay, who's the artist? Who did this piece of work? So naturally, we're always assuming intelligence behind design as our kind of go-to. But when it comes to something a million times more complex, like the nature and the mechanisms of nature, then we kind of shift away from that theory. It's very, very interesting. There's a couple more. I think there's a beautiful book, Rethinking Darwin. by one devotee, and he also goes into a lot of this. And there's a few interesting facts. I was just looking at a few bits of research that they did, and humans are supposed to develop into modern humans as we are about 200,000 years ago. So that kind of, you know, there's that diagram, apes and then cavemen, and then so around 200,000, 100 or 200,000 years ago, we became modern, according to modern science. But actually, recently there's been some discoveries in Californian gold mines, and they found some fossilized instruments, intelligent instruments like mortar and pestle and different things, and these are 55 million years old. They carbon dated them. So what, how do you explain that? Apparently at that time we were still monkeys. But a lot of these things are hidden from us because it doesn't necessarily fit with the current world view. Yeah, so think we won't go into all of that because we could spend a whole class talking on conspiracy theories. and it would be a lot of fun, but maybe not so Krishna conscious. But also it brings a deeper point for where we're getting our information from, but also something that we can actually focus on, what we can change, is how much do we accept information and truths based on it reinforcing our current behavior, our current kind of beliefs. So we also, even maybe as spiritualists, are accepting or rejecting certain truths or practices because it reinforces our current worldview, it reinforces our current practice, and it supports us, it makes us feel good. And so we have an emotional reaction when we're reading something or when we're studying the scriptures or when we're trying to learn from someone. And we can be selective about our own kind of truths, what we're accepting, you know. So the Bhagavad Gita in the sixth chapter, it says, a very famous verse, it says that one who's conquered the mind is the best friend. But for one who hasn't conquered the mind is the worst enemy. So the mind can be our greatest friend or our worst enemy, depending on whether we've controlled it or not. And we can see that when we're reading or when we're studying scriptures, how controlled is our mind? Do we have an emotional reaction to something that's being said? I don't know, maybe some of you have experienced that yourself if you're explaining to someone. For example, I was trying to explain Ekadasi to my family or my sister, and immediately it's an emotional reaction. Okay, why would you do it? Like, that doesn't make sense, you know, it's silly. But if someone, I don't know, like, if there was a news press release or something that said, scientists have shown, you know, that if you fast every 2 weeks on this day, then it's good for the digestion and all of these things. So we have an emotional attachment or reaction to certain things based on our current point of view. So that the importance of humility comes in here, the humility when we're approaching spiritual topics or the scriptures or a spiritual teacher. When we have this humility, then we can actually access a deeper level of truth, because we're not accepting or rejecting something, we're just trying to take it as it is. So for example, you come to a point in the Bhagavad Gita and it just doesn't make sense, and some of Prabhupada's statements are quite strong, and you think, okay, I don't agree with this, or it doesn't make sense. But humility, if we kick in our humility there, then we don't throw the book out, you know, and say, okay, I'm not into this philosophy at all. Actually, it enables us to say, okay, right now, because of my conditioning, because of my whatever it is, blocks or emotional attachment, I'm not able to understand this, but I'm just going to put it to one side and carry on. And then maybe, hopefully later, I'll come back to this and have a deeper access to this information. So that humility is essential when studying. And it allows us to actually access deeper levels of truth. And I'm sure you find that maybe you've had this before when you've reading a book the second time. We're reading a Bhagavad Gita or something sacred for the second time round, then it's completely new set of realizations come from the same reading. Because that's the nature of spiritual topics, is we can go deeper and deeper as our consciousness and level of understanding deepens. So Prabhupada's statements, even in this purport, are quite strong. So he's saying that on all planets there's life, you know, that's completely opposite to what we're told. Only the earth has life, and maybe there's some microorganisms out there somewhere. And Prabhupada made many other very strong statements like this. Like we were discussing in yesterday's class, Prabhupada said that they never went to the moon. You know, Prabhupada was actually, the devotees were actually watching the moon landing. Prabhupada was sat there with a group of devotees. They actually watched the moon landing together. And Prabhupada immediately at that point said, they didn't go. Right? And and that's like huge, because this is like, you know, your whole country, everyone's fired up, wow, we went to the moon. And Prabhupada immediately just said, no, they didn't go. And that was his faith in scriptures. And now obviously when you do some research, you find that actually probably they didn't go. It's a lot of, and we discussed that a little bit yesterday's class as well. But some devotees actually left Krishna consciousness. They stopped their spiritual practice because of that one statement that Prabhupada made. They couldn't handle it. They couldn't accept it. Because of, like I was saying, that emotional attachment that, wow, this is my country, we went to the moon. And they couldn't accept it. So they actually stopped their spiritual practice completely on the basis of one small statement by Prabhupada. And you could ask, why is Prabhupada so strong? Because he's trying to shake our worldview. He's trying to get us to rethink. He's trying to open our eyes to a wider reality, which is completely against the modern dogma of what we're taught since young. Einstein said that you can't solve a problem with the same thinking that you created it. So in the same way, Prabhupada is asking us to change our thinking from the root, and then that break our conditioning and allow us to access deeper knowledge and deeper realization. And this is the power of hearing from spiritual authority, from hearing from self-realized souls. And that's why in the scriptures, accepting a spiritual master is so deeply emphasized. In the Gita, there's a very famous verse. It says, Tadvini Pranipatena. We should accept a spiritual master and we should surrender to him. We should serve him. And because he can see the truth, Gyaninas Tatvadarshana, he can see the truth, therefore he can impart it unto someone else. He's got access to this realm of spiritual understanding, therefore he can share that with people. And that's also against many schools of thought, because it's very much a man-made world. You know, we do it ourselves. I can, through my hard work, I'll become fit and healthy and strong and strong-willed and all of these things. You know, so it's this surrender that Prabhupada is asking, and the spiritual process is asking us, is again completely against the modern worldview. But the idea is that we can only understand something according to our current experience. So, for example, we can't think of a new color. We can't think of a new smell. It's just impossible. We can't do it. But if someone shows us a new color, if someone puts in front of our nose a smell that we've never smelt of before, then we're able to access that. So in the same way, the spiritual teacher, we don't know about these certain truths, these realities, and we can't imagine it because we haven't had experience of that yet. But if someone has had experience of that, and they are in that realm, then they can show you that truth, you know, they can reveal that to you. But it requires a certain level of surrender from the practitioner's side, because it's a whole lifestyle that goes around that. And Prabhupada has given us not just the knowledge, he didn't just translate the books, but he actually prescribed a whole lifestyle that goes alongside the knowledge, because it has to be backed by the practice. Because again, it's about accessing deeper levels of knowledge, and that comes through the practice. That comes through the lifestyle around. Just like meditation, you can't just live a whole life of doing everything else and then expect to sit down for 10 minutes in the morning and be completely clean and, 5 minutes of meditation a day, but then the rest of my life and day is just packed with everything else, you know? So you can't expect that to be effective practice. But if you try to regulate your life, you try to live healthy and all of these different things, then it's going to become more and more effective. And so in our scriptures, it actually speaks of three kinds of knowledge. The first is, anyone know these three types of knowledge? There's three Sanskrit words for the different types of knowledge that we access. Yeah? One of them. Yeah, pratyaksha is the first one. So pratyaksha is knowledge that we can actually see, or something that we can physically observe. So I can see this is wood, this is, I can feel it, I can touch it, I can observe. So that's the first kind of knowledge. What's the second kind of knowledge? Yes? Anuman. Yeah, so this is, Anuman is what we can infer. So this is through kind of the mind. So, I don't know, it looks like some of you are tired, so maybe you didn't sleep enough last night. So that would be my anuman, that would be my infer kind of speculation on something. It might be true, it might not, but it is kind of my inference and philosophical speculation, you could say. But it's not always perfect. And what's the third and final type of shabda? Yeah, so shabda means to hear from an authority. This means, Prabhupada would often give the example, if you want to find out who your father is, you don't know, then the quickest person to go through is your mother, and you're asking, who's my father? The other two could take a long time. You could do all the DNA, or you could kind of think about it in your head for a long time, but if you just ask your mother, then that's the quickest. So in the same way, Prabhupada says that shabda, this hearing from authority, is the best praman, it's the best way of accessing knowledge, because it saves time, and most of the time it's extremely reliable. So as I was kind of looking into this verse and trying to think of what to speak, I remembered that there's one scripture we study called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and it talks actually about the journey of one person, Gop Kumar, and Gop Kumar's journey through different realms of the universe on his search for spiritual truth. And so Sanatan Goswami has written this book, and it goes through all of these things. So I thought I could share a little bit from there, because it's quite relevant to this verse. But it talks about the coverings of the universe. This is in the second half of the book. And different elemental planes which are covering the universe. And we discussed actually in yesterday's class, we were discussing this kind of the different realms and how to survive in a different atmosphere. You need a body. Jai Shri Radha Gokulananda Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshmana Hanuman Shri Shri Gaura Nithai Ki Jai. So yeah, we spoke about how in a different atmosphere you need a body suited to that atmosphere, and you need a consciousness also suited to that atmosphere. So in this scripture it describes the different coverings or the different realms within the universe, and to survive in each realm you need a suitable body. So it describes Gop Kumar's journey through these different realms at the end, and he travels through these different elemental planes or elemental layers, so water, fire, air, ether. Then he goes up to a plane of Mahat, and above that there's the plane of Prakriti, energy. So it describes his travel through all of these different layers. And as he went, he had to get a body of the same kind of, made suited to that environment, so made of the same material energy or material that he's... It's kind of confusing in my head. But basically he's traveling through that realm, and he has to acquire a body suited to that realm, made of the same stuff. And so as he traveled, he was changing his body, and he had to elevate his consciousness accordingly to be suited. So I think that question actually came up at the end, how do they actually have to change their body according to that atmosphere? And so in this book it explains how he did acquire different bodies. And it described he actually went beyond these material realms into a spiritual realm, where he attained a fully spiritual body. But basically the point I was trying to make is that every atmosphere has a certain quality, and living entities can adapt to that. Prabhupada's point here is that it's not random selection, but it's actually an intelligent process, intelligent design. And it's hard to believe, you know, but it's comes again back to, who do we trust, you know, where are we getting our information from? And again, yesterday's class we were discussing that quite a lot, where, you know, who do we trust? Do we trust some businessmen who are telling us certain things, or do we trust someone who's dedicated their life to the service of others and dedicated their life to spiritual truth? And Prabhupada is someone who's done that, you know, so who do we trust? It's easy for us to trust the scientists and all the things we're taught in school, but ultimately, you know, what are they? What kind of lives do they live? You know? But we saw Prabhupada's example, we saw how he lived his life, and so therefore, in my eyes, he's a completely trustworthy person, because his life was exactly what was said in the scriptures. You know, he didn't deviate from that one inch. So, although it's very different from our current worldview, it's if we actually look deeper and we try to go past this emotional block that we often have, then we can try and accept these spiritual truths. And we're actually so fortunate to hear from this kind of authority. We've been given access to these books, like Srimad Bhagavatam, these scriptures. It's the 5,000-year-old text, and they talk of all kinds of things. You know, it's amazing. Science says at that time we were cavemen 5,000 years ago, but these scriptures are talking of. It talks about Pushpa Vamans. It's like kind of UFOs in the closest thing you could explain. And there's Brahmastras. It's like nuclear weaponry is described. It talks about interplanetary travel. It talks about and not just all of these things, but how to actually achieve these states of consciousness and reality. And so it's very, very deep for what science is saying, that at that time we're cavemen, you know. So it's, it's all based on the consciousness. And accessing these is based on consciousness. And even the Bhagavad Gita talks about that. There's one famous verse, it says, Yanti deva vrata devan pitranyanti pritir vrata. So whatever consciousness you have at the time of death, that's what you'll attain in your next body. So it's whatever consciousness you reach at the end of your life, you know, that will be your next destination. And your body is given according to the desires. So basically, reaching these realms, different realms, and Prabhupada talks about this in this book, it's not through mechanic means, you can't go there by a spaceship, but it's through consciousness, because you have to kind of match yourself with whatever realm you're trying to enter. And therefore we're so fortunate that even beyond these material things, we're being given access to hearing about the spiritual world, the spiritual reality, which is completely beyond our conception. But people from that reality, like Prabhupada, have come down and they've described it to us. And the ability, the fact that we're able to hear from these kind of people about a whole new realm, this spiritual realm, is very, very, very special. You know, and we say this prayer. We said it just before the start of this class, Om Agyana Timirandasya, that my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torch night of knowledge. So that they're opening our eyes, you know, to this different realm, this whole new world. And it's very special that we can have a process that we're actually in touch with these kind of people. I remember from my very first session, actually I first came, I did a Be a Monk course. That was my first kind of, when I first came to the temple. And one thing that I remember really clearly was we had a session, our first, very first session was with Kripa Moya Prabhu. He's some of you may know him. He's a very amazing devotee. But one thing, the only thing I remember from that whole class, he spoke to us for about 2 hours. The only thing I remember was that he said, if you could give me something higher, then I would accept it. You know, but he said, I've searched through all kinds of religions and all kinds of practices, and right now, this is the best thing I've found. But if you came to me tomorrow and told me that there was something more, then I would accept that. And I was blown away, because most practices, it says, no, this is the truth, this is the way, nothing else works. But this kind of humility and this openness and this, I was blown away. And that really stuck with me, that, wow, these people are really humble. They have something very deep, but at the same time, they're humble and they're open. So it's very, very special. And that's why we have this sikha. it's a handle for our spiritual master to pull us up. We need help in our spiritual life, so this represents a handle, you know, so we can be pulled up and uplifted in our spiritual lives. And Prabhupada said, I have the backdoor key, and it's like we were discussing that someone from that realm can give access, entrance to these realms. So Prabhupada said, I have the backdoor key, and I can let you in if you just do these, follow this process. He can let us into the spiritual world. So we're very, again, like I was saying, very, very fortunate to have access and contact with these kind of people and these kind of scriptures. I don't know if all of what I said made sense. It was maybe a bit jumbled up. But anyway, I tried to share a little bit from this verse. We have a few minutes left if anyone has any questions or comments or corrections, then be happy to. Yes. The mic.
Hare Krishna. I wonder if the higher, so the more subtle the material energy is, mm-hmm. does that sort of, is the lower ones manifested from the higher ones? So does that mean if you're connected with a higher one, then you kind of gain a level of control or mastery over the lower?
Sure, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's a good question. We understand that basically everything's coming from the spiritual world. So everything's emanating. This is the central point. This is the source. And everything is emanating, and it becomes more, it goes from subtle to gross the further down you come from this source, which is we know as Krishna. So yeah, as you go down, it becomes more and more gross. And depending on what... So your question is, if you're connected with the source, do you have a certain level of kind of control? Or is that right?
Rather, it doesn't bother you as
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah. Prabhupada often made this point that when you're connected with the source, then you don't need to worry about this other processes. Like it talks about Gop Kumar, like this journey I told of how he goes through the different universes. He had to do that journey because he didn't have anyone telling him what was actually highest. So he had to go through this step by step because he could only go a little step up. And Sanatana Goswami says that you can only kind of move up according to your current experiences or your current point of view. So he could only imagine something a little bit higher than this. So he had to go step by step, and it took a long, long time for him to make his journey to the source. But like I was saying, we're so fortunate. Someone from there, from the source, is telling us all about it and how to get there and connecting us directly. And so we skip out all of these kind of mini steps on the way, and we have a very clear path. And Prabhupada said that all the yogic powers, all of the liberation, all of these different things, actually, a devotee easily achieves these. Because like you said, he's connected to the source, so he doesn't have to make these gradual steps. If he wants, they're there, you know. But most of the time, a devotee doesn't want it, because he just wants to serve.
Can I ask another one? So Lord Shiva, right? He kind of has a realm beyond the material universe, mm-hmm. and he obviously controls it also. Does he have a body that is material, and is that ego?
He has a spiritual body because he's beyond the material world. But we won't get into it because there's many different aspects of Shiva, Tattva, and there's also Shiva in the material world and a Shiva in the spiritual world and different things. So that would be a whole... I don't know enough myself to share, but you can hear whole classes about... but yeah, basically he's outside of the... He's in a spiritual body. Yeah. Yes. Prajan Puran Srinivas.
What you're talking about is knowledge. The acharyas, they're there all times, in all ages. So if we just follow their teachings, then the knowledge becomes easily accessible.
Yeah.
But generally, individuals try and approach it in their own way.
Yeah.
So that's when the complication comes in. But if we can accept the parampara teachings,
yeah,
then the knowledge is easily accessible.
Yeah, and that was one of the points I was trying to make, is that the humility to actually be able to follow someone is so essential, because it gives you access to so much more depth. But in the world and the current point of view that we live in, it's very much about my own work and progress and kind of self-made, you know, I'm self-made. And so that's very much the modern point of view, but ours is that of humility, that if we can accept, then there's so much, such wealth of knowledge that we can gain access to, but it requires that humility and surrender to actually give entrance into that. Yeah, thank you, Baba, for sharing.
I can also add to this point that even in material things, to be expert in something, you need a trainer, teacher, yes?
Yeah.
You can understand something or learn something to some extent, but to be expert,
yeah,
you need to take guidance from expert, yes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even Gop Kumar, he didn't himself figure out, but somebody told him that there is something else, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Thank you, Prabhu. I think...
So, thank you, Prabhu. So, basically, a question. I think I have a comment to make, but just to follow up on what you just said. So, so taking that instruction could be from an embodied being or a disembodied being. Right? So, we could take instruction from both. It can be internal, or it can be from outside.
Yeah.
I suppose the point that's worth making.
Yeah, definitely. Guru comes in different forms. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a physical person, but so many forms the scriptures describe the Guru can come.
Yeah. So I suppose, Prabhu, Samarahari Prabhu, so in the citizens of the higher realms, higher planes of existence, so I suppose the further you go up, the further you can travel through the different atmospheres. Yeah. For example, citizens of Gandhava Loka, Chanara Loka, Siddha Loka, all these lokas, I suppose they possess enough power so they can travel wherever they want at will in the lower realms, especially the earth atmosphere here. I won't make a connection between that and the theories of UFOs, because this buzzing thing going on about UFOs and the planet, they may very well be here. Very well be here. Because I've seen some spectacular things that I've experienced and I've assessed and look at them and think, well, yeah, strange. But we can't go because we're too gross. So we can't go anywhere, basically. Yeah. But they can do it because they're in a gross forms. Yeah. Grosser. So our mechanical arrangements to go somewhere, I suppose it's a wishful thinking, but it's a good step because we want to travel because we're meant to travel. At the moment, we're confined in this thing called body, very gross and dense. We can't do anything with it, hardly. Yeah, devotion, yes, but in terms of exploration, it's not much we can do with it.
Yeah, but thank you for the point. Yeah, Prabhupada actually said that the devotees were at Kumbh Mela. It's a big festival, maybe some of you have heard of it, in India, and there's lots of yogis that come there from the Himalayas and the mountains. And devotees asked Prabhupada, how did the yogis get there? Prabhupada said they actually travel through the rivers. They come from the Himalayas, they travel down through the rivers. And when you look at the numbers, actually, in Kumbh Mela, there's so many millions of people. It's actually physically impossible to transport that many people there by public transport that's available within India. So the trains and the things, they're not actually, don't have the capacity to explain that amount of people in one area. And so Prabhupada said that actually the yogis, they come, they travel, they enter the river at one point and they travel down the river. So, because it's a science, it's a, like we were saying, it's all about consciousness, and the yogis can actually do that. They can put themselves in different bodies according to, would they reach that through consciousness? But it's not necessarily our goal as devotees. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Hare Krishna, thanks so much for the nice class, Samarahari Prabhu. I just had a quick question. You were speaking about the different pramans, and I was thinking that kind of each one has their own kind of, you know, certain weak points or shortcomings. And I was just thinking, what would you say, what are some potential maybe blind spots in Shabda Praman? One thing I was thinking about could maybe be attachment to a certain type of view. And how can we make sure we're not falling into this trap, you know? Some thoughts.
Yeah, that was another thing that I was trying to convey, was that we often accept only certain truths. So we'll read something and I really like that, you know, so I'll kind of look into more of that. But something else we read in the Gita or something, you're not quite sure about that part, so let's just put it to the side. Maybe you don't need to practice that one so much, you know, I'll focus on the other. So yeah, it comes down to, again, that humility and just kind of being introspective when we're studying is, okay, am I really trying to accept the whole of this, or am I just kind of picking bits that I like, or and then we get the most benefit. Trying to accept it as it is and not just kind of putting ourselves out of our minds for a little while and just kind of separating ourselves and say, okay, my mind has a certain reaction to these things, but let's just try and kind of escape the mind for a few minutes and trying to absorb this knowledge as it is and see what that does, see what that means for my life. Yeah, one more question. The mic. If anyone needs to go, it's 8:30, so you're welcome to go for breakfast.
I just wanted to add to that point, actually, because I thought, so the even you were talking about, you know, how emotionally we have a reaction when we don't, this viewpoint doesn't adhere with ours. But even if we think about, you know, even science, when it goes to quantum mechanics, or if you, like, time expansion, I don't know if you guys have researched into those theories, like, you know, string theory or whatever, it starts to not make any sense. Like, it starts to actually become mind-boggling. Like, our mind just can't take it. Like, this is probably even further than string theory or quantum mechanics. So, obviously, it's going to be very confusing. So, yeah. I guess, you know, in the Shastras, in the scripture, it says that mind is only one layer of material element. So, this element is actually even below intelligence and ego. So, your ego can be much bigger than your mind. And that could, you know, it just basically means that your mind cannot really digest everything.
Yeah. Until we control it.
Yeah.
Like I quoted that verse that the mind can be the worst enemy or the best friend. So the mind can help us in our spiritual practice if it's controlled.
How do you control?
That's the whole practice process of Krishna consciousness. Or the beginning of it is to control the mind through all the things that we do. But it takes some time. It's not an overnight thing. You just, okay, control the mind. Yes, Prabhu.
I think what we can add to Roman's Prabhu question, and this is actually very important, is about blind following, yes. Mm. And this is also, it's dangerous actually for us, for others. And Sri Prabhupada didn't want us to follow blindly, yes. He always, even in Bhagavad Gita, he's saying that blind following, we should not try to do it. Yeah, we should consider always. Even he said, "Don't trust me. Trust Krishna." His Prabhupada was saying. So you should try, or whatever I say, you try. How it's in your life? Is it really working? And if not working, please ask questions.
Mm. Yeah, Prabhupada really encouraged, especially initially, ask a lot of questions, challenge things. But at some point, when we're convinced, then there is surrender required to go deeper. But yeah, definitely we should always be questioning.
Because in many religious paths, you just believe and that's all.
Yeah.
But we should always test for our intelligence, yes? Like we have this Bhuti Yoga, yes? Prabhakti Yoga is Bhuti Yoga, so it's also connected with intelligence.
Thank you. Okay, I think we can finish there. Gantarar Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.